I thank you for giving me this opportunity to stand before you, and I hope that all of us will take out our Bibles and follow along, so at the end of this message, hopefully we can all take something away from it. Now, when I was thinking about what to speak about, when I originally wrote this message, I happened across the TV. TV was on. I came across this news program, talking about how there was a group of Christians who had been arrested for protesting during the gay pride parade. Now, wanting to learn the circumstances behind this, I jumped on the computer, I got on the search engine, and I typed in Christians arrested in gay pride parade. Now, for those of you who haven't used search engines, you know most of the time that the first five or so links that you happen to come up with, they got nothing to do with what you wanted to search for. But this time, the very first link that came up had to deal with this event. In fact, it even had a video link showing the whole event taking place from beginning to end. Now, circumstances behind this series of arrests were this. In Pennsylvania, they have an annual event called Outfest, which is a gay pride parade. Now, a group of 11 Christians went to this event to protest it. Now, all they had were signs with biblical messages on them and a megaphone. Now, before the group ever got close to the parade grounds, a group known as the Pink Angels, who are described as a militant group of homosexuals, they created a human chain and refused to move so that the protesters couldn't approach. Now, make a note of that for later, that they were doing this human chain on a public road and wouldn't let people pass. Now, eventually, the Christian protesters were allowed to enter the grounds, but they were encircled by the Pink Angels the entire time so that they could cover the protester signs with big styrofoam angels and blow noisemakers so they couldn't be heard. Now, skipping a little ahead, one of the protesters starts quoting verses from the Bible, and the other members start to sing hymns. Now, no sooner had they started than the police came and arrested them. Now, I'm not sure if everyone knows exactly the rules behind it when it comes to protesting, but as far as I understand, it's legal to protest any event as long as it's done in a nonviolent method and you're not blocking a public street. Now, you remember me telling you about how the Pink Angels were blocking that public street to keep the Christians out of that event, didn't you? Not even one of them was arrested, while all the Christians were arrested while speaking on the sidewalk, which isn't illegal. Now, anyway, eventually, six of the protesters were released because they didn't quote scriptures. But the other five were hit with multiple charges. And I forget the exact number because it was so many. But the charges that if they were convicted, they would face up to 47 years in prison. Now, just make sure you heard that. I'll repeat it. It's 47 years for quoting scriptures in public. Now, you're probably wondering, why that much time? And well, the answer is this. Pennsylvania state law now included sexual orientation as part of the hate crimes law, which originally used to just be based on your ethnicity. According to the district attorney's office in Pennsylvania, and this is their own words, district attorney in Pennsylvania, he said that the Bible is considered, in their own words, fighting words, and reading it is the same as threatening someone's life based upon their racial background. Now, I had searched up after this. I had done this sermon about two or so years ago. And recently I found out that they managed to get the charges dropped, but they still managed to get knock two of the Christians with like public service or something like that. Now, after hearing that, you got to wonder kind of where am I wanting to go with this message. Now, am I going to do one about homosexuality or something like that? But no, that's not what I'm going to do because, as you know, I tend to find the kind of not obvious thing and the obvious. Now, what caught my attention when I was researching this whole thing was the fact that had those five Christians been convicted, not only would it have made illegal to preach against homosexuality outside of the church, it could have basically opened the floodgate for any other issue that people didn't like. First off, you can't talk about sexual immorality in public because everybody's their own to do with what they want. Can't teach about that. And basically, it just goes on and on till finally, there's nothing of the truth left that you're allowed to talk about. Now, I can't see the future, so I don't know what might happen. But for me, it's not very hard to imagine that at some point, a time might come when they try and pass laws to try and limit what we can and can't teach. In short, they'll want us to compromise. And there are many so-called Christians who've begun to compromise their beliefs to become more politically correct, is the word I want to look for. So what's the Bible say about compromise? I like to look at a story in Daniel chapter 3 that I think shows very well what the Bible has to say about that compromise. Turn with me there, if you will. Daniel chapter 3, starting with verse 1, and let us see what we're to do when we're asked to compromise our faith to become acceptable in the sight of men. Beginning in Daniel chapter 3, verse 1 says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the province gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So here we have the king. He's making it a law that no matter what your religion or beliefs, you have to bow down to this golden image he had set up. And going even more than just making you bow down to it, he says, hey, you don't bow down to this image of my God, I've got a furnace waiting for you. Now, I'd read this chapter a couple times before, but it was only when I was writing this sermon that it occurred to me what might have really happened there on the plain of Dura. I'd always assumed that when all these musicians got together, they all played the same thing. But look back at Daniel's description of the music that was played before the people bowed down to the image. Verse 7 says, "So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, and symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Now, you kind of catch that? See, it didn't say when all those instruments playing symphony with one kind of music. No, it said when they played in symphony with all kinds of music. It's possible they weren't all playing the same song, or at least they weren't all playing it in the same way. Apostle Paul once wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 7 through 8, "Even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? For if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, who will prepare for battle?" Paul's saying if things don't play the same thing, it's just noise. Now, if this had taken place today, imagine what it would have sounded like. Suddenly you hear the sound. You got French horns, kazoos, bagpipes, violins, classic guitars. You got organs. Someone's beating on a washtub drum. You got harmonicas and every other imaginable instrument, not all playing the same thing, but playing all kinds of music. Now, you got some are playing rock, some alternative, some country, some classic, some opera, some elevator music. Every person's music is represented, only when it's played all together, it makes a terrible sound. Now, it's going to take two different extremes. Can you imagine hearing someone playing a banjo over here, and then you got a punk rocker over here screaming into the microphone? You might like one or the other, but when the other one's playing, it sounds terrible to you. Like, shut this one up, I want to hear this one. It's just noise. Now, I wonder if some of those people who may have bowed down to the image, they bowed down to the image just to make Nebuchadnezzar shut that music off. Like, hey, I'm bowing, shut that stuff off. And isn't that what it's like today? You got all the different groups and religions. They constantly bombard people who truly hold to the true word on all sides. They tell them, hey, you need to change that to get more members. Hey, you shouldn't believe that. That's too old-fashioned. Hey, wait. You shouldn't teach that. That sounds too harsh. And after finally getting hit by that over and over. People finally cry out, fine, I'll change it. Just leave me alone. They'll compromise. Now, however, amidst all this, all these things going on, there were three brothers who refused to compromise. And the traits they show as a response is what I want to look at next. First, I want to look at the consistency. Daniel chapter 3, verse 18 through 12 says, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Now, this isn't the first time these brothers have refused to obey the king's commands when it would compromise their faith. If you go a couple chapters back, you see that they also refused to obey the king's choice of food. Now, taking that into account, it shows something important about these brothers' character, and that's consistency. Too many Christians today lack consistency. They're on again, they're off again. They're hot, they're cold, they're up, they're down, they're in, they're out. Sometimes they just give up altogether. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58 says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. How we need that today. Whether it's the king's choice of food, or bowing to an image in the middle of a mess of noise, or standing up at a PTA meeting to voice our opposition to handing out condoms into grade schoolers instead of teaching them the right thing to do is to not do it at all, or telling people what they need to hear no matter if the public image views it as being backwards or old-fashioned, we need to be there consistently and unchanging. Next, we'll look at the trust these boys have. Read Daniel chapter 3, verse 13 through 15 says, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. When you or I hold conviction about something, what it means is that we've weighed it and measured it to the point that we've become convinced that is true beyond a reasonable doubt, and that anything that goes against it is false. It's no longer something we hold in the realm of possibility. We found it to be a truth worth defending. Now, with that in mind, let me ask you, what religious convictions do you hold? Now, I'm not asking you which convictions you allow a preacher to stand up here and promote. See, that's quite a different thing. It's a well-known fact that people can sleep or daydream their way through a sermon on Sunday, go up to the preacher, shake his hand on the way out, and never feel the need to change their thinking. Second day exit that door, everything they heard is gone. No, I'm not asking you about my convictions. I'm asking about yours. What principles are so settled in your mind that they've become facts that cannot be denied and must be defended? If I asked you right now to take out a piece of paper and write down a couple of them, could you do it? These three brothers, they're standing in front of the most powerful man in the kingdom, and they're basically told, hey, I've heard you refuse to bow down to my golden idol. Now, maybe people are kind of lying on you, telling stuff, trying to get at you. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you one more chance. Says, next time that music comes on, if you bow down to my idol, fine. I'll forget it all. It's back to the way it was. But if you don't bow down, I have a furnace waiting for you. And let me ask you, what God is going to save you from that? Now realize, Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't say that I might throw you in that furnace, or I'll find some time at a different date to throw you in when I've got you, when I'm able to. No, he said, I will immediately cast you into the furnace. So don't think that these brothers faced the possibility of death. They faced the certainty of death. The next time that music sounded would decide if they lived or if they died. But look at what these brothers said right into that king's face. It says, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Every time I read that scripture, give me chills when you really, really take it in context. Because it makes me wonder, how many of us have that much trust and conviction to be able to stare death straight in the face and still hold our beliefs? Sadly, that trait's something that's becoming more and more scarce in the church. There are people who aren't even facing that kind of punishment, yet will still compromise their beliefs in the drop of the hat because they don't want any trouble. When they're out with their friends, they won't, if there's something bad going on, they won't say nothing against it because I don't want them to think I'm strange. What these brothers said, it shows us the trust they had. They said, surely our Lord will deliver us from your furnace. And even if he doesn't, we'll still not bow down to your idol. They knew that if they trusted and believed in God, he'd be able to save them. And even if they didn't, they would trust in him until that last moment. Revelations 2:10 says, we are to be faithful unto death. And that's exactly what these three brothers were prepared for. Next, look at the fiery furnace. Daniel chapter 3, verse 19 through 23 says, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Now, upon hearing the brother's response, Nebuchadnezzar, his whole attitude changed. His face curled up. And he yells to his servants, you heat that furnace up as hot as it can get. It was so hot, and the fire, it was so consuming, he had to get brave men to throw the brothers in because it was so hot, it killed the men who threw them in. That's pretty hot, don't you think? It's able to kill the people who just stand near it. Surely, there's no human way possible for these brothers to survive this ordeal. Wouldn't you agree? But I want to look what happens next. Daniel chapter 3, verse 24 through 25 says, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Nebuchadnezzar, he was astonished, and rightly so. He was certain. He's certain there was no way that these brothers could survive. He just witnessed his own soldiers being killed just from being near that furnace. Yet now, not only are the three brothers not only unbound, standing in the midst of this fire and not being killed by it, but there is also another form among them. God has sent an angel to shield these brothers from the fire. Because there might not have been any humanly way possible for these brothers to survive, but for God, all things are possible. Finally, I want to look at the result of not compromising. Daniel chapter 3, verse 26 through 30 says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fire furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw these men on whose body the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's words and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language that speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Because the brothers did not compromise their beliefs, they are not only spared death in the fiery furnace, they also proved to Nebuchadnezzar that the power that their God had, they showed him that. And not only that, the king decreed that anyone who spoke ill of the God of these three brothers would be put to death, because no other God, not even that gold idol that he had set up, had that kind of power. By not shifting their beliefs to compromise what the majority thought, they were saved because they were steadfast and trusting of their God. I have no doubt in my mind that if those three brothers had even entertained the idea of bowing down to the golden idol, they'd have been consumed by that fire. And that applies to us today. True, there might be times when we are pressured and oppressed because of our beliefs. In fact, the Bible mentions it in 2 Corinthians 4, chapter 4, verse 18 through 12, 8 through 12. It says, "When we are hard-pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, and the life of Jesus also may be manifest in our body. For we who live are always delivered to death for Jesus' sake, that the life of Jesus also may be manifest in our mortal flesh. So then, death is working in us, but life in you." We must all strive earnestly to not compromise our beliefs for what is more popular. We cannot let ourselves be caught up changing things in that this book to make it more convenient. We cannot turn our backs on things God has laid out for us. Because let me tell you something, if we turn our back on God, he'll turn his back on us. Acts chapter 14, 30, "In times of ignorance, God did wink, but those times are past, and we'll be held accountable for the things that we do now." Please take your songbook out and turn to the page that's been selected. I want to ask you something here this evening. When they call for compromise, what will your answer be? Will you be able to stand steadfast and unblinking as we're commanded to be? I'm not saying it'll be easy. Saying you believe something and having a conviction about it is one thing. Standing by it is another. Don't you suppose that these three brothers were afraid? I can't imagine it any other way. Yet they still did not bow down. Hopefully, we will all not be faced with a true fiery furnace as they were. But we do face challenges. We face the world's disbelief and prejudice against a true Christian. But we must not bow down as some have. Because if we do, when we depart from this walk of life, I know that there's going to be a fiery furnace waiting for us. If you had any need, maybe come forward as together we stand and sing.